Hello, I'm Jonathan Mast, and welcome to this edition of the Sedgwick Podcast. Today we have an interesting topic and two great subject matter experts from Sedgwick here to discuss ketamine and its use for chronic pain and depression. And my guests are Dr. Rima Hammoud, AVP Clinical Pharmacy and Utilization Review, and Dr. Teresa Bartlett, Managing Director, Managed Care for Sedgwick. Thank you both for being with me today.
My pleasure.
Good afternoon.
Well, I have to admit, I don't know much about this topic, so I am going to learn along with the rest of our audience. And we'll just jump in with you, Dr. Hammoud. What are the medical uses of ketamine beyond anesthesia? Or if you want to give a broader overview of the whole drug, that's good too, to help us understand what we're talking about.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you, Jonathan. And good afternoon. Ketamine is a dissociative anesthetic. It's been used for procedural sedation since it was invented in 1962, actually here in Detroit, Michigan, my hometown. It is also an opioid receptor agonist, which means it can potentially have some efficacy for acute pain. There are also some studies that suggest that ketamine infusion may help with symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder and may help patients with treatment-resistant obsessive-compulsive disorder and anxiety. There's also some limited research that indicate ketamine may have some therapeutic effect in reducing craving and withdrawals associated with alcohol use disorder. And most recently, it has some promising outcomes in rapidly reducing symptoms of treatment-resistant depression. So there are a lot of new studies that are coming along. There are a lot of promising outcomes. But it is important to note that while the science that supports the potential benefits of ketamine, it might sound compelling, and the evidence for the best use of ketamine, either alone or in combination, it's still evolving, and it's very inconclusive. So ketamine works in different parts of the body, and it has many different mechanisms. There, more research is really needed to fully understand the efficacy of ketamine, its safety, and the long-term effects of ketamine administration.
So Dr. Hammoud, do you think it's worth, or I think it's worth mentioning, that it's a Schedule 3, right? It's a non-narcotic drug, but it's a Schedule 3, and it is only FDA approved for general anesthetic. Just so the audience,
yes, absolutely. I think that's a very good point, Dr. Bartlett, because it's only used by anesthesiologists in a very controlled setting because of its potential effects. And that's why right now it's only indicated for the IV infusion is only indicated for anesthesia as a Schedule 3.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Bartlett, when we look at this at ketamine, how does it work in the brain to treat conditions like depression and PTSD then?
That's a great question. well, it works in the brain primarily one way. So if we think about people with long-term depression and treatment-resistant depression, what we think we know from the clinical research is that some important connections in the brain are lost. The neurosynapses are lost. And what those synapses do is they let the nerve cells of the brain communicate. Well, it's likely that the number of synapses has been diminished because of depression. And depression is so stressful on your brain that you actually think of it like a bush. You maybe prune those synapses where you're losing some of those connections in the brain. And so the research shows that soon after that first dose of ketamine, those lost connections will start up again and start to grow new. The more of this activity, the better the antidepressant effects of ketamine. So some of the neurons involved in mood and the use of these chemical neurotransmitters, I know these are all big words, but what we're really talking about is glutamate. And the nerve cells need glutamate receptors to take in information from other nerve cells. For some people that are severely depressed, those nerve cells don't get so excited by glutamate anymore. And it's believed that that's because the glutamate receptors are deactivated or weakened. But other people with this problem, but after people with this problem get ketamine, these nerve connections get restocked with new glutamine receptors, and they start to respond again. So this is really something magnificent. Research suggests that though ketamine's main action is in glutamine receptors, it also needs those opioid receptors, as Dr. Hammoud was talking about in the first question, to have those antidepressant effects. So the concern is in medicine is that if you need the opioid receptors, like opioids, ketamine, you might need more and more and more of it in order to achieve the same effect. And so it's important that as this drug is used to treat drug-resistant depression, the treatments are spread out over time and they're tapered off so that we can mitigate that response of needing more and more. Ketamine also has hallucinogenic properties and sedative properties. So the big thing that you hear about ketamine is it causes this dissociative effect. And dissociative is a big word for meaning separated. So it's sort of like you can feel separated from your feelings. You are not those feelings. They don't consume you anymore. And that is the big bonus here with ketamine.
So Dr. Hammoud, building off what Dr. Bartlett said, what are the potential risks and side effects then of ketamine use?
So from what Dr. Bartlett was saying, the benefit of this dissociative effect that could be good for depression is also one of the side effects of ketamine. One of the main ones is a psychological effect. So with ketamine, you experience hallucination, dissociation, confusion, and agitation, especially in elderly. If somebody's age is greater than 60, their risk of experiencing hallucination increased drastically. The side effects of ketamine depend also on the dose and frequency of use and individual factors. One other big one is cardiovascular effect, because it can really increase heart rate and blood pressure, which could be problematic for people with heart condition or hypertension. We have also seen respiratory effects, so shallow or slow breathing to a dangerous level. People can they might have loss of consciousness during ketamine treatment. It also has some common side effects like GI side effects, nausea, vomiting. But another big one would be dependency and addiction. Like Dr. Bartlett was mentioning, it can have tolerance because it does work on opioid receptor. And because of tolerance, people might need higher doses at times. And it can lead to dependence or addiction, particularly when used recreationally.
So Dr. Bartlett, can this be addictive? And if so, do we know what the signs are when looking at that?
So, yes, of course it can be addictive, especially for people who have a history of addiction to other substances. And the reason that it's so appealing to those who have an addiction problem is because it's very fast acting and it's very strong. And so, the signs of the addiction are that you crave more, you want more and more and more. And that's why I mentioned in the earlier question, you want to make sure if you're a physician administering ketamine, that you prolong the treatment, the duration in between giving treatment, and you taper it off so that you're not just cutting someone off and stopping the treatment.
Well, Dr. Hamoud, what types of ongoing research is being conducted on ketamine and its therapeutic applications, if you want to expand upon that?
Sure. So right now, ketamine has been looked at for a broad spectrum of mental health issues, such as bipolar disorder, neurological disorders such as Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, post-stroke rehab, and there is ongoing research to really explore its potential in treating various substance use disorder, including alcohol or cocaine withdrawals and alcohol cravings. Another interesting one is for chronic pain management because it does work on that opioid receptor. The ongoing investigation is really looking at the optimal dosing and duration of ketamine treatment for chronic pain, especially around the perioperatively. How can we utilize ketamine IV to decrease post-op analgesic use of opioids for pain management? And like we mentioned earlier, for treatment-resistant depression, that's an exciting one. There are ongoing research looking at the mechanism, how ketamine can have that rapid antidepressant effect, and how we can look at the long-term efficacy and safety for individuals who might be using this for treatment-resistant depression. And although ketamine is a dissociative anesthetic, it can induce psychedelic-like effect, especially in higher doses, because it can cause alteration in perception, hallucination, ego dissolution, or really a sense of interconnectedness with the one's surroundings. And people who undergo ketamine therapy for either depression or any other psychiatric disorder experience the psychedelic-like effect during the session. And the nature and the intensity of this experience really vary depending on individual characteristics, like their age and other drugs that they might be taking or the comorbidities. But it's important to note that this psychedelic-like experience, it's typically transient and not necessarily the primary focus of the ketamine treatment. The goal is usually to target specific symptoms or disorder through the broader pharmacologic effect of the drug, not so much focused on this psychedelic effect that it might be causing. But there's some exciting research that's going on with ketamine, so we're continuing to monitor it.
Dr. Bartlett, as when we think about from a cultural and societal attitudes toward ketamine influence, what's the perception, do you think, or what are you seeing out there?
We are seeing increased frequency of ketamine being used recreationally, as is evidenced by overdoses and number of poisonings reported to the National Poison Control Center. That increased 81% from 2019 to 2021, and ketamine confiscation by law enforcement increased 349% from 2017 to 2022. So we know it's definitely out there, and society wants it. We also know that the pandemic did a lot to negatively impact mental health in this country. And if ketamine can be used properly and safely to address depression, anxiety, I think it's a great thing. So culturally, we're seeing more and more abuse and availability in the streets, and we're also seeing clinics pop up all over the country that may not have the most pure motives or being using a proper protocol. Let me just say that.
Well, staying with that, and you, Dr. Bartlett, the use of ketamine for medical versus recreational, I guess probably the most known example here just recently was Matthew Perry, the actor who was reportedly using ketamine. And if you could expand on that, and then Dr. Hammoud, your thoughts as well.
Well, I wasn't directly involved in his care. What I've read about the situation is Matthew Perry was using ketamine in a supervised setting to help him cope with depression and recovery from decades of addiction struggles, which he was very candid about in his book. The amount found in his stomach was similar to the amount used during general anesthetic, which is a huge amount. This suggests he was getting it from non-medical sources, because if you're getting it in an anesthetic amount in an IV, it's not going to hit the stomach, right? So it suggests he got it from non-medical sources. And, as Dr. Hammoud talked about, it has a negative it can have negative cardiovascular risks, and it is generally known on the street that if you're going to use ketamine recreationally, there's a threshold that you don't cross. You don't use it with alcohol, you don't use it with other drugs, and pools and hot tubs are really off limit. It's kind of this general known thing among users or abusers, I might say, on the street. Rima, I don't know if you want to add anything there.
Yes. The main thing is when used for medical purposes, for which Matthew Perry was using, it is administered in a clinical setting because it needs careful monitoring, not just during the session, but even afterwards for the safety and efficacy of the treatment. However, when it's used recreationally, you don't have any guidance. So you don't really know how to act if or when going through the hallucinogenic effect. And that can lead to the misuse and addiction, and also health risks such as cognitive impairment or physical harm. Ketamine is very readily available under the street name of Special K. Oftentimes it is available as a sublingual tablet, which is dosed differently compared to when used in a clinical setting, which is IV infusion or intramuscularly or even intranasally. So when people are using it orally, it goes through the body in a very different way, and often the effects are not seen right away. So people tend to take more, not realizing that they might be overdosing it. So Matthew Perry's example, of course, is like a prime example of why you want to seek that medical or a medical professional help, and not use it recreationally, because you can really have these crazy side effects and not know about it.
Well, staying with you, Dr. Hammoud, how does ketamine compare to traditional antidepressants and other psychiatric medications that we might currently see prescribed or on the market today?
Sure. So ketamine differs in several ways. The main one is the mechanism of action. So how ketamine or antidepressants target different neurotransmitters in our body. So the most common antidepressants that we might see are Lexapro, Zoloft, Cymbalta. They all work on something called serotonin or norepinephrine or dopamine receptors in our body. Ketamine, on the other hand, like Dr. Bartlett mentioned earlier, works on a glutamate system. So it binds, it antagonizes this receptor in the body, but enhances the plasticity of the brain. And that can potentially create various pathways and rewire the brain in a positive way. So that's a big differentiation of ketamine versus other antidepressants. Another big one is the rapid onset of action. The most it produces the ketamine, the antidepressant effect really, really fast, within hours, versus traditional antidepressant might take weeks to months to have a noticeable effect. But because it works so fast, the duration of effect is very short-lived as well, lasting anywhere from like few days to few weeks after a single dose, versus typical antidepressants or other medications used for psychiatric conditions take that are taken daily as a tablet form, and they can provide longer lasting symptom relief, and they're used as an ongoing basis. It's not usually like a one treatment or just few treatments over a few weeks. And then the administration of ketamine is very different. It's mostly as an IV infusion in a controlled clinical setting. It can also be given intranasally, again, in a controlled setting. It's monitored during the treatment and afterwards, versus traditional antidepressants are typically either a tablet or a capsule, and they can be used at home. From safety perspective, they both cause similar side effects, similar common side effects, I should say, such as nausea, vomiting, change in appetite or sleep pattern. The important work for ketamine that differs from typical antidepressant is the dissociation or the hallucination side effect, change in blood pressure and heart rate, especially on higher doses. We don't typically see that with other antidepressants. And then lastly, the long-term safety and tolerance with ketamine, that's still being studied. We don't know a lot about ketamine long-term effects, especially in different formulation. Its potential for abuse, its potential for dependence, versus with traditional antidepressants, they have been extensively studied over many years, and their long-term safety profiles are generally well-established, so we know more about their effects on a long-term basis.
Dr. Bartlett, a lot of great information so far, and I think you both given a little bit of information on this, but specifically, do we have any emerging trends? Are there innovations on the horizons on the horizon as far as the administration or delivery of ketamine therapy is concerned?
As I said earlier, there's some clinics popping up that are trying to get ketamine out there. to make it easy for physicians to prescribe it and for patients to receive it. So one trend that we've noted is, some of these clinics are popping up. And as I said, there are no FDA-approved protocols for the use other than for general anesthetic. But we're seeing, for example, there was one clinic that Dr. Hamoud and I came across where, for example, a physician can sign up, pay a fee, and then the clinic, the ketamine place that they've sort of signed up in the network with, will deliver a ketamine experience to a patient's home using lozenges, and they send them a kit, with an eye mask and to create a certain atmosphere for the patient when they go through the trip. And they have people on, available like on FaceTime or on a portal that will be with them during their quote-unquote trip to try to ensure safety and efficacy, and they try to vet these people. So I think in some regard, we're going to see more and more of it. We've seen it in our book of business. for years now, popping up, you know, headache clinics, all kinds of things for chronic pain, for which it really, there is no known use. However, you know, doctors are trying it, and as we've talked about in the past, off-label use is how things get traction in the medical world, and I'm not certain that what's happening out there right now is a highly thoughtful approach. I have met a few doctors out in Los Angeles that have a very strict protocol that they adhere to. The person has to come into their clinic. It's administered IV. The dosage is exact. And they're trying to do something in a very controlled way and study it, which is the appropriate way to take this on. And so it's a little difficult if you're seeing things like telehealth and lozenges in your home as opposed to a legitimate clinic that will really take care of a patient and be there in case something adverse happens during the infusion. So I think there are innovations. I don't know if they're exactly great, but there are innovations happening out there to get more and more ketamine more into the mainstream.
Well, as we close out on this topic, for both of you, any final comments, especially if an individual is listening, you know, what precautions should we look at and take if we're considering ketamine therapy? And are there any additional factors that determine its effectiveness when talking to a physician or just making personal choices?
I would say when thinking about ketamine treatment, medically speaking, a comprehensive evaluation to see not just medical condition, but psychiatric condition is really important. Also looking at any medication that individual might be taking, whether it's prescription medications or over-the-counter medications or any supplements, because ketamine does have a lot of drug interactions that can, they can either increase the amount of ketamine in the body or sometimes ketamine can increase the effect of other medications, such as tricyclic antidepressants. Ketamine might increase their quantity in the body or decrease their metabolism. Another thing to understand is like risk versus benefit. Is ketamine really the right treatment? Have they tried and failed other therapy for depression? Because right now it's only being looked for treatment-resistant depression, not as a first-line agent. Some of the factors that might affect ketamine use is individual factors. Like I mentioned earlier, age is a big one, or any comorbidities that the patient might have. Dose and administration can be a big one, how they're taking it, how often they're taking it, what route of administration, so IV versus oral or intranasally. Intranasal ketamine, known as S-ketamine, is FDA-approved for treatment-resistant depression, but oftentimes that can be problematic for some people with nasal cavity issues, such as mucosal inflammation, or if they have a deviated septum, or it's hard to self-administer. So the route of administration can be challenging or can play a big role when thinking about ketamine use. Psychosocial factors, I think, are important because not just during the treatment, but after the treatment, do the patient have a social support? Because ketamine does have those hallucination or those dissociative side effects, they might uncover something during the treatment. So being able to talk to somebody after it about that experience is important. And lastly, concurrent treatment. Right now, ketamine is only being looked at an add-on to their regular treatment. So for antidepressant effect, It has efficacy when combined with other forms of psychotherapy or other medications. So looking at the whole, looking at it holistically is important.
And I would just add, as a closing remark, that I think it's promising. Ketamine is promising. I love the glutamine and what it does to the receptors in the brain. And I think it is a drug that we will see used in the future, hopefully safely. And if someone is considering ketamine therapy, my advice would be just go to a reputable place, go somewhere to have the infusion, try to avoid the home therapy and the street version. Just try to get something from a legitimate clinic and maybe, you know, a teaching hospital type setting. But more to come in the future. It has some promise.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, two of the best to tell us about things like this. I appreciate both of you spending time with us, and hopefully we will have additional discussions in the future on ketamine. And until next time, we thank everyone for listening.